step into the world of power, loyalty, and luck.
I'm going to make him an offer he can't refuse.
With family, cannolis, and spins mean everything.
Now, you want to get mixed up in the family business.
Introducing The Godfather at ChumbaCasino.com. Test your luck in the shadowy world of The Godfather slot.
Someday, I will call upon you to do a service for me.
Play The Godfather, now at ChumbaCasino.com.
Welcome to the family.
VGW Group, no purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions, 18 plus.
Folks, this is Cindy Dees, and it's Thursday, which means it's time for romance. I'm your host of Love and Uniform Radio, and today I'm delighted to have author Sophie Jordan on our show. Sophie grew up in the Texas Hill Country and spent her childhood weaving fantasies of dragons, warriors, and princesses. She's a former high school English teacher, and she's also a New York Times and USA Today bestselling author. She writes Avon historical romances, and I just recently read a wonderful book that's her newest release called Beautiful Lawman, and hopefully I'll get her to talk about that today. She lives in the Houston area with her family, and when she's not writing, she spends her time overloading on caffeine. She prefers lattes and Diet Cherry Coke. She talks plot lines with anyone who will listen, including her kids, and she crams her DVR with true crime and reality TV shows. Sophie also writes paranormal romances under the name Sherry Kohler. So welcome to the show, Sherry, and I'm just delighted to have you today. Thanks for being with us.
Thanks for having me. I'm ready to talk romance.
Let's talk books. So tell listeners a little bit about what kinds of books you write and who you write them for.
Oh, let's see. I write in a lot of different genres, and I started out writing historical romance. I kind of segued a little. I wrote some paranormal romance for a few years, and then kind of let that go, continued with paranormal romance. Then I added young adult fiction into the mix, which, of course, is very romance-y. I always coin that term. So it's very romance-y young adult fiction.
Right.
And then I added contemporary romance into the mix. So, you know, basically I write, I read across genres so much that it's hard to limit myself to just one thing.
Yeah.
So I write, what I'm loving, what I'm loving.
Do you find that your readers tend to follow you across genres? Do you find that they'll go with you wherever you go now?
You know, I have a core group that really will stick with me. It's fun. When I started writing young adult fiction, some of those 15-year-olds are now women in their mid-20s, it's been 10 years. So
right.
I'm really proud of the fact that I've been able to introduce some young women to romance, reading young adult fiction.
Yeah.
I think
a lot of adult readers read young adult too. I know I've read quite a bit of it, but then I have a teenage daughter. You mentioned that you have a teenage daughter as well. Mine is 19 and a freshman in college. And congratulations on making it to the mid-teens with yours.
I did. She's 15 today. She is an avid reader. So she reads
wish
a lot
happy
of young
birthday
adults.
For all of us.
I will. She's a big girl now. So she's toed the line. She's dipped into some new adult. I definitely feel like she's a romance reader. And she will, be a romance reader probably for the rest of her life. So,
do you run your young adult stuff faster?
I do. I bounce ideas off her all the time. I mean, she's living it. That is her world right now. And I read my first romance novel when I was 13 years old. I took it, nabbed it off my grandmother's nightstand. And I think she knew. I was, you know, we didn't have, I think there was three stations on TV, and I just, you know, she had control of the remote, so I went.
Go get the books. Do you remember some of the first romance authors that you fell in love with?
I do. I was in I of course read, you know, Kathleen Woodwist. I was a huge fan of those early Johanna Lindsay books. I devoured
them. Yes. Yes.
And then I was a huge fan of Victoria Holt, who wrote kind of that gothic romance mystery. I think that's why I do have like edgy and darkness sometimes popping up in my books, and I can probably look back and point to Victoria Holt as the reason for that.
That's awesome. Yeah, my mother was an English teacher, a high school English teacher, and she would read romances just to take a break from, you know, stuffy, formal, dead guy British literature.
Sure.
And that's where I got going. I would steal them from her, and I would go sit in our basement. I would hide in the basement and read read romance novels. And and I think the first one
I
ever
read.
I think
a lot of us have that story.
Well, my mother actually taught one in her high school classes. It was a book called Catherine by Anya Seton. And it was the story of the mistress of John of Gaunt. And she had her students read it as a lead-in to Chaucer and to then into the Elizabethan era. And she commented to me after years later when I confessed to having read it, she burst out laughing. She's like, as if I didn't know. And she said that many of her students would come in and ask if there were extra copies of the books because their mothers and sisters were getting a hold of this juicy historical romantic novel. And reading them, and they couldn't get their homework done because, you know, mom was plowing through their book. So those books, you know, yeah, Woodwist and those grand historicals, Judith McNaught. And I feel like, you know, half of what I know about history I learned from reading good romance novels.
Isn't it true? I feel like the whole reason I did well on my SAT, the verbal section of my SAT, was due to historical romance novels. You know, I definitely had a pretty good vocabulary.
Yeah. Yeah,
for sure.
Exactly. Do you find that you tend to go more cross-genre today? I'm finding in the business today, it seems like lots of books are kind of two or more genres in the same book. You know, it's a historical romantic suspense, or it's a paranormal Texas cowboy, or it's a, you know, steampunk Western historical. Do you find that you, because you have that capacity to write many genres, do you find that you kind of want to start mixing them up a little bit, or do you really get into one and just want to stay in one?
Well, I mean, I don't typically write a historical romance I write might have a mystery angle or something to it, or it might not. I just think my stories are all very layered and they're similar in that way. You know, I tend to have families and subplots and, issues and going, issues that you might be reading a historical romance, but, you know, there may be issues of parenthood in there. There could be issues of, maybe a heroine has a miscarriage, or, you know, something that is still relevant, even to the contemporary woman. I mean, it's life and relationships and, you know, surviving
totally.
The world, right?
Now, do you have a favorite genre to write?
Gosh, I always say my favorite thing to write is what I'm not writing.
Yeah, totally.
If I'm working on
historical,
or I'm working on a young adult or a contemporary, I want to be writing something else because it is hard work, and it's getting from page one to the end. It's a challenge, and there are days you just got to make yourself sit in the chair. Even though I feel like I have the best job in the world, I love my work. I love that I get to write, you know, stories I dream up in my head, and I have readers there waiting for them. I mean, I couldn't imagine. As a teenager, I had a fantasy of being a writer. I can't imagine. I couldn't have imagined that it would come true, that I'd be living this life. But I think that might be what keeps me fresh, is the fact that I hop around a little bit.
A little bit, yeah.
That, you know, I might be working on a young adult novel, but already in my head, I'm thinking about the contemporary. I'm thinking about, you know, I just finished revising a historical romance, and now I'm working on Beautiful Sinner. It's the book to follow my release, Beautiful Woman. So, nice. In the process of revising one, I'm already thinking ahead to the next one.
Right. Yeah, I always tell people my favorite book I've ever written is the one that I'm about to write next, because yeah. that's the one I'm typically thinking about.
It has no mistakes. Perfect.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah.
Definitely. And, I think I get excited if I can come up with a good first line. It just sets the mood and I can take off running.
Yep. That's interesting. Yeah. I had lunch a long time ago with R.L. Stine, the writer of the Goosebumps series. And he told me
that would be cool, I imagine.
He's a neat guy. But he comes up with the title of the book. And once he's got the catchy title, then he said the whole book writes itself. And I was like, wow, that must be nice to get to title your own books.
I know. I guess just the title can encapsulate everything. You know where you're going, right?
Yeah. It's kind of like a good first line. Yeah, I hear you.
Yeah, that's so funny. I know, a good first line. I talk about with other writers, sometimes I know how the book will end as I'm starting it. And those mm-hmm. are easy rides, you know, when you know
right.
where you're going. But there has been many a book where I'm like, I don't know how this is going to end. And That makes it, you know, it's a harder book to write.
It's like walking on a tightrope without
right.
a net. But yeah, it's kind of scary.
Exactly.
Do you know off the top of your head how many books you've written and published?
You know, I spoke to a group on Tuesday, so I do know what I told them. I said, I know I'm over 35 novels
yes.
to date. I know I'm over 35. So, the last time I tallied, but, yeah, I mean,
people ask me, and I'm like, I don't know. Yeah.
Exactly. It's crazy. The more you write, the more you lose track, and you have to sit down. Mm-hmm. I had to sit down about a year ago. I took a count. I know I was like 36 or something, and I'm like, how many have I written since then? I do average about 3 books a year. So
gotcha.
That, you know,
for me, the hard thing is coming
sometimes.
Up with. For me, it's character names. I actually recently went back and built myself a spreadsheet of all the main character names that I've used, because I feel like I've used every name that I like on Earth now. And,
yes.
you know, now I'll like, ooh, I need to name this character. And someone will say, how about XYZ name? And I'm like, no, that's some slut I went to high school with. I'm not naming that, you know. And that's some guy I worked with who was a jerk. I'm not using that. Yeah. Yeah. But I really struggle to find good names.
I've caught myself using names I've already used, because you are so
right.
drawn to certain names. Like you yeah. will use them again. And I'm like, oh, I used that name already in a different book, but I used it again
right.
in this book. So
yeah. Yeah. That's my big struggle.
Claire seems to be a name I like.
Claire. Gotcha. Yeah. Claire.
Yes.
Yeah,
I think
Claire
I've used it
book.
More than once. I know. Yes.
Oh God,
good
I love
name.
It. Yeah, I have a full manuscript out in submission right now, and the heroine's name is Claire. And I think I've probably started 3 or 4 books since then and used Claire, and it's like, it's not published yet. I think that's why it feels like the name isn't taken in my list yet. And I'm like,
right.
somebody published that book so I can use a new name. Yeah,
I've had names changed after I finished the book. Like, I had to go and do a replace all. It just didn't work out. So I was like, we need to change this. And the editor and I would brainstorm and come up with something.
Yeah. Well, and I have a tendency to name, I'll use several names in the same book that all start with the same letter. And, you know, I was told at some point, you know, stop doing that, because readers classify names by the first letter. And I had no idea. And it was a big revelation to me.
Yeah.
That's so funny. And I don't know, you've done some historicals. I find myself going back to look for old-fashioned names from time to time, so that they fit the time period, and that gets kind of challenging, too.
Oh, yeah.
Because some of the old-fashioned
names
are truly dreadful.
No, I think, and then there's sort of a revival lately, like, of names that are like, you know, Olive and Vera, you know, those are sort of coming back again. You know, all those
yes.
names I would have used or I will use in my historicals are very popular now. But it definitely, I feel like the names of my characters are a reflection of the book and what kind of book it is. And, you know, especially if it's historical versus contemporary versus YA,
right.
you know, young adult.
Oh, yeah, for sure. Now, do you have a project kind of sitting out on the horizon that you're getting ready to chew on, that you're excited about, that you haven't started writing yet?
Yeah, well, I've just started writing Beautiful Center, and it's more than likely the last book in my Devil's Rock series. It's book 5 of a series. And I've had such a fun writing these contemporary books. They're all set in Texas, where I live.
Right.
They're gritty and they're contemporary. But they really, what I think, the reason I'm most fond of them is just how slice of life they feel like to me.
Yeah, very much so.
My writing them is fun. They're colloquial style, almost colloquial. I came up with the first sentence of Beautiful Center yesterday.
Good.
And I think it reads, the thing about small towns is everyone knows your business. Is my first line, and I'm excited about it.
True.
And I'm like, that pretty much sets the tone. It's almost sets the tone and the theme for a lot of their conflicts throughout the entire book. You know, so I was like, this works. This really works.
That's
cool. That kind of, it just jettisons me. You know, it gives me that velocity to, you know, here I go diving in.
Love it.
I'm excited about that one. I had a historical romance I finished called The Duke Buys a Bride. There is a little known tidbit, historical tidbit, of there are recorded sales in Great Britain where a husband would take his wife to the town square and he would, you know, with a halter on her neck, he would offer her at auction.
Oh my goodness.
Sell his wife. And this was a way to dissolve their marriage by transferring her marrying her to someone else when they didn't have things like divorce. Or, you know, the means to have a divorce, acquire a divorce. And usually what I've discovered historically was that she would have someone in the wings. They kind of had already agreed, like, okay, I'm going to put her up for auction. And she would have already maybe even chosen the person she was going to marry next. And it would go smoothly. But, of course, what if it didn't? The nature of books are conflict, right? So it's revised and it's aptly titled The Duke Buys a Bride, and I'm really excited about it.
What time period did that have happened in?
You know, well, this takes place, it's early Victorian, it's 1850s, but one of the cases I found was like, I found a case like as late as 1903, like in a very rural area of Cornwall or something, you know, where this happened. And I was like, wow, you know?
That's really
late. I don't know how.
It sounds medieval to me. It surprises me that it's happening in the Victorian period.
There was a case I found recorded that late really surprised me, too.
That's so cool. We should write books about women able to sell husbands, too.
That's maybe, right? That would have been funny.
You need to write that book next.
See, that I'm already, immediately my mind leapt to a contemporary setting. Like, maybe.
Yeah,
how could we do this? I see a darkened gambling den somewhere, a card room or something.
That's
where you gamble someone away. All right, I'm writing a book with you right now, Cindy.
See,
here we go.
Well, it's a good demonstration for our listeners if that's how it happens. Someone says something and you go, ooh.
That is exactly how it happens. It's a couple writers sitting around a table. Maybe we're having a drink and someone says, you should do this. And then you stop and you stare at each other and you're like, there it is.
Ooh, that'd
be fun.
That's
my next book.
Yes.
Cindy, you're going to see this book in 18 months on a shelf somewhere.
Love it. I want to read it. Make sure you let me know when it comes out. That'd be so funny.
I will.
Well, you could go so many ways with it, too. I mean, it could be a paranormal where it's a world where the men are sold and bought. You could go, historical with it.
It could just be a guy in debt, he's like, okay.
You could go contemporary. Won't put the toilet seat down, got sold.
Exactly.
That could
crazy.
Be so much fun.
Oh, yeah.
I gotta love it. Now, I noticed that you were a high school English teacher. I grew up with a high school English teacher, and my entire impression of my mother's life when I was a kid was walking around with stacks of papers in her arm waiting to be graded. Was that your experience as well?
That was. I mean, I taught for 4 years, and I had the dream of writing in that time, but it just wasn't a reality because you taught all day and then you graded and created lesson plans at night. There was never going to be a time that I could devote to writing the way I needed to. So, I mean, the grading, and in high school, right? And if you teach them honors classes, they have more essays versus multiple choice. You're grading all the time. So that was my life. And which is why I resigned with the birth of my daughter. And it was probably going to be, it was an indefinite plan that I would stay home for a few years with her and go back to teaching.
Right.
But suddenly I was like, you know, this is an opportunity. I'm home. She takes two naps a day. You know, I have a 7-month old, and let's see where this goes. And I wrote my first book when she was 7 months old, right? Finally sleeping through the night. That's sort of like the mark, you know, where I started writing. Yeah.
That's awesome.
And
that's actually when I started writing, although it was a little bit different. My daughter had some pretty serious health problems, and it was just so exhausting to deal with her that I hired a nursing student to come in 3 days a week for 3 hours just to give me a mental break from physical therapy and all the things that were going on. And I should have slept in that time, but I ended up just to kind of save my sanity, locking myself in an office and writing. And I had just those three windows a week. I had 3 hours, 3 days a week. That's all I had. But that's when I wrote my first book, was during that time. So yeah, I relate to you on that one.
It really is its own therapy to ourselves. You know, it definitely feeds my soul. So
yeah. And that's what I tell people, to save my soul.
I tell people that writing has always been there for me. I remember, like, you know, starting to write in spiral notebooks in junior high, and just when I think about it, I can credit writing as being there for me when I was my saddest and when I was my happiest. Like, it's both.
Right.
It feeds your soul. If you're sad or depressed, it lifted me up. And if I was happy, just, of course, I was going to do that thing that made me happy. I was happy, you know? So, always been there.
That's interesting. See, I didn't find writing until later. I was in my mid-20s, and my mother, the English, and she was actually a writing teacher specifically. She got her PhD and taught writing at a university after, I don't know, 20 years as a high school English teacher. She actually bet me $1 that I couldn't write a book, and that's how I wrote my first book, was on a $1 bet. And so it came to me later, but I agree with you.
That's like a hair from your mom's even greater. My husband did kind of, when I was home with her, I remember him coming home from work and I was like, I'm kind of bored today. She took two naps. She slept through the night. And he did kind of put it out there as all right, you've always talked about writing a book. It was really up or put up moment. Like, come on, let's see it. And I was like, fine, I'll show it. I'm going to do it.
Oh, see,
and he was
and
like,
I kindred souls.
Like, I will.
Like, all right. Yeah.
I know.
My mother actually paid off on the bet when my first book was published. I have a shadow box in my office with a $1 bill above it that she gave me. And
that's great.
So she paid off the bet, but that's way cool. Well, and
the thing
is, you know, I think lots of people, I think I saw a statistic just last week. It was in a newspaper, and they said that 80% of people think they could write a book. And my challenge is, you should. Go do it.
Exactly.
Because you never know who a great storyteller
is
going to be.
Absolutely. How many people come up to you and say, I've always had an idea, or I've always wanted to write a book, and you're like, well, do it.
Do you think I have a good plot for you?
And then they want you to write it? No. That's your idea. You need to write that book, not me.
Yeah. I always tell people, look, I've got way too many books in my head already. Yep.
Right, and ideas are never in short supply for writers.
No.
Like, I have more ideas than I need. I have a lot of ideas. I just need more time to write them. I have all the ideas in the world. Yeah.
Well, and again, to go from idea to fully realized book is a beast. And I don't think until you've tried it, you can really appreciate just the sheer amount of work it is to craft it and construct it. And it's a lot of working parts to get
it really,
all crammed together.
It's really taking that lump of clay and molding and twisting and turning and working it over and over. How many times we go over the same thing, you know, the same pages again and again.
Yeah.
We get them right.
I always tell people I know a book is done when I'm sick of it. When I don't ever want to see it again, then it's ready.
That's a good indicator.
Pretty much. It's like, oh, okay, I can't see any mistakes anymore. I hate it now.
I know.
So, yeah, those are the best books. Well, gosh, you know, the time has just flown here, and I know I'm keeping you away from your writing days, so I think I'm going to have to let you go back and start working on that story where you sell the guy.
That's right. I got to work on the one about, you know, I have the first sentence completed and I need to continue. I have more than that now, but it's still early enough where the blank page is very exciting. A blank page means anything can happen.
Yes. My goal is to get 50 pages into a story until I'm stuck. So, yes.
Yeah.
Gotta love it. Well, thank you so much for talking with us today. And I'm going to say goodbye to you and remind everybody that this is a copyrighted podcast from the Authors on the Air Global Radio Network. Please join us in 2 weeks when we'll talk to another amazing author about Love in Uniform. Until then, happy reading.
Hey guys, it is Ryan. I'm not sure if you know this about me, but I'm a bit of a fun fanatic when I can. I like to work, but I like fun too. It's a thing. And now the truth is out there. I can tell you about my favorite place to have fun. Chumba Casino. They have hundreds of social casino style games to choose from with new games released each week. You can play for free anytime, anywhere. And each day brings a new chance to collect daily bonuses. So join me in the fun. Sign up now at ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.